Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
I'm Sam Legasic.
And I'm Dreadful Dan Gallagher. And we're two old buddies that have lived our life at the edge of the mainstream.
So come join us where things are a little odd.
This is the
This earth of yours will be reduced to a burned out cinder.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Oddcast, Movies, Music, and Gaming. And today with me is the man himself, Dreadful Dang.
It's me. The Dang Man. How are you doing?
The Dang Dong. Yeah, good. How are you, friend?
Very good, yep. Full of music, the rich tapestry, the lifeblood that flows through our veins. And looking forward to sharing some of it with you, yeah, by sort of maybe like slitting my wrists and just letting a bit of the lifeblood out.
Don't do that. It's a special day for Dan today, because today he's going to be taking us through his top 10 albums of 2020. Teaser for everyone there.
So, sexy.
Dan, talk us through what's your 2020 in music been like during this pandemic?
It's been the most music-packed year of memory, recent memory. Mm. I really can't think of a time when I've listened to so much new music and old music as well. But yeah, like a lot of people listening, I expect, it was nice to have time like working from home. You can just put stuff on in the background. So yeah, as it is, I made a list of everything that came out in 2020 that I kind of like listened to, not just once. Usually I need to listen to it a few times to feel like I've actually heard it and digested it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I've made a list, and I don't necessarily agree with like trying to score things, but to help me kind of like sort these out in my mind and get a ranking, I did apply scores out of 10 to everything. And on my like Instagram, Dreadful Dan's Discs,
mm-hmm.
I kind of posted like my top 20, and again within that I didn't want to be too anal about like, oh, this is my number 13, this is my number 12, my number 8, but you know, like within there generally there's like the top ones, so you know, just to be able to get through this episode with a degree of practicality, I have ranked the top 10. And yeah, I'm just kind of excited really to talk to you about this. I think there's some albums in here that might have kind of like slipped by you that you would really like.
Yeah, definitely.
And so hopefully, yeah, people listening, if you kind of like want to get a taster of some stuff that's out there, like new music, like especially if you're our age and you maybe like don't really engage too much with new stuff that's coming out. Yeah, there's a load of good stuff. So let me give you my recommendations. And also I've made a Spotify playlist of my top 20, picked one song from each album and tried to like sequence that in a way that's got some kind of flow. So yeah, if you like anything that you hear about today, go and check out that playlist. I'm sure Sam will put a link in somewhere.
It'd be in the description, episode description, so check it out.
So without further ado...
I remember.
Shall we just swing into...
Go for it, number 10. Do it.
So number 10 is Deerhoof with their digital-only release, Love Law. This album, I'm a big fan of Deerhoof. They are one of my favourite all-time bands. Possibly my favourite band of the last 10 years. I got into them around 2005. And at that point, they were already like 10 years into their career. And I thought I was late to the party. But here we are 15 years later and they're still doing really good stuff. And this one, basically, they had another album, which is also in my top 10, Future Teenage Cave Artists. We'll come to that later. That was released, I think, like around May. And Love Law came out in September. And what it is it's like a kind of like a mashup album. They've taken all these songs from the 50s to the 80s and covered them in a way like in five phases. So each phase, each track is kind of like three or four or five or six or more different songs. And they just like hammer them all in together. But they play it in this like really exciting, like indie noise rock style. The band, you know, they have a lot of like jazz leanings as well. So it's really like surprising. And the stuff that they're covering here, there's a bit of everything. There's some, yeah, like free jazz, like Ornette Coleman. There's some metal and punk like Voivod. There's like TV themes, like the Knight Rider themes in there. Some music concrete, avant-garde stuff, unabashed pop music. It's everything. But they've kind of picked, they said the 50s to the 80s, because it's kind of like a sister album to Future Teenage Cave Artists, which is a bit of like a kind of like reflection, I think, on like how bad the world situation is at the moment. It's got some like socio-political themes. And this is kind of like going, what's happened since the end of the Second World War? Like they've taken all this music.
Nothing.
Look, culturally was like quite optimistic. And they've just shoved it all together, I think, to kind of be like, what's kind of come of all this?
What's one of the tracks we play people to have a quick listen to?
I think let's have a listen to a little bit of Love Law 1. Did you check a bit of this out?
Only via you. So I had a bit of a listen. I didn't have a proper listen, basically, to kind of warrant much of an opinion on it. It sounded quite chaotic.
Yeah, the sound is chaotic.
So there was a lot happening. But I had remembered as I was listening to it, I'd remembered you talking about it on this podcast before anyway. When I just listened to it. So I was like, all right, yeah, it's this. And yeah, it sounded interesting, but I think I'd have to give it a proper sit down and listen to it in its entirety for some, especially for something like that, before I gave any kind of opinion on it. But I only really know Deerhoof through you, really. But I did listen a little bit to the other one,
Future Teenage Cave Artists.
Yeah, and I enjoyed bits and pieces of that actually. So, okay. Yeah.
That's we'll come to that later.
Right. Oh, will we? Spoilers.
Yeah. Cool. That's up there.
Right.
I had reservations about doing two Deerhoof albums, but I thought
still
at the end of the day,
choice. If you thought it's worthy of it, then fair enough.
There were some other ones here that were creeping around the number 10 periphery.
Yeah.
And I was like, at the end of the day, I did just enjoy Love Law more.
So. Fair enough. I mean, I know I've sent you my top 10. And actually my 10 is something that you had chosen, that I had only found out through you basically looking up for stuff. And that might drop out from one of the others, that I've been listening to. My number 10 spot, it's weird because my number 10 spot, every time I do this, it's the number 10 spot that's always the hardest to fill.
Yeah.
Because I think you feel like you're disregarding everything. So it's like, what needs validating in some respect to actually make it onto the list? Not even like what's being
exactly. Made.
And it's just because it's number 10, it's like, there's so many that's of an equal footing.
Yeah.
Really difficult. But I really liked what, because you've seen it, but I won't say what it is, but I really liked the album, but I was just like, there's something I've listened to recently, which I just think it might actually be better. So I might actually change mine within the course of doing this. But yes.
You've got a week to change your mind.
That's true.
And of course, obviously, my recommendations are going to have an onus on what you pick as your final top 10, of course.
Oh, well, yes. Go on then.
Number nine. Dan Deacon, Mystic Familiar. This album, basically, I didn't know Dan Deacon until I listened to this. I'd heard the name floating around.
Yeah.
And I kept thinking it was Deacon from Animal Collective.
Right.
And I was like, well, I kind of know what they do. I don't need to listen to him. But it's a completely different person doing completely different music. and I heard one of the singles of this and I was just bowled over by it, and that was Become a Mountain. Shall we have a little listen? So what I loved about this song was that it's so like jubilant without being like mawkish or cheesy.
Mm-hmm.
And it really as well sounded a lot to me like these synthesizers, analog synths, they sound like the whole Mort Garson sound that you know I love. This sounds like Plantasia.
Yeah.
But it's kind of been grafted to like Mercury Rev. Like late 90s, kind of like some indie type thing.
Yeah.
I also hear a little bit of Daniel Johnston in there. It's kind of very, okay. It's like optimistic and hopeful, but you can hear there's still a little bit of a heavy heart in there. Mm. Like lyrically, this song, Become a Mountain, and the rest of the album, there's all this stuff about like, it's not like being resigned to death, but it's like, having a mature approach to life and its cycle. He's been basically reading a load of TM stuff, Transcendental Meditation. I think he read David Lynch's book.
Yeah.
David Lynch's big TM guy, isn't he?
He's one of the biggest TM guys. I actually went to a TM thing.
Did you?
Yeah. This is... a year and a half ago.
Okay.
And it was funny because the guy there was in Southend, and the guy was, I shouldn't probably say that. And the guy was like, why did you, what brought you to this? And I was like, purely like David Lynch talking about it so much. And going down a bit of a rabbit hole and realizing like Jerry Seinfeld and a lot of these other guys do it and find it really, really useful. And he was like, yes, I hadn't heard of David Lynch until, recently. I was like, what?
What
are you talking about? This guy, right, his TM teacher, going off on a tangent now, He is like proper, he's a teacher, as in an actual teacher, as in that's his job. He is like the most boring looking, no, very zen, like, as in like completely monotonous voice. He's got his brown suit. He was like talking to us, bearing in mind we're all like, there was like five of us and we're all men in like, well, I'm in my 30s, but they're like in their 40s, whatever. And he's writing stuff on a board like a teacher. And I'm like, I am at school. This is unbelievable. He's talking to us like it's an actual lesson. This is crazy. And he was going on about the benefits and blah, 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 and the science behind it. And I'm like, don't talk to me about science behind it because it's, you know, whatever. Like people will find science for anything. And all this. But he actually, so David Lynch says, you know, you need to go to the TM website so they get a proper qualified instructor. Don't just see whoever about it, go through, get it done officially. Yeah. And you pay for it according to your income.
Okay.
So at that point, I wasn't working and he was like, oh, it's only like 150 quid for like the six sessions or whatever. But it can go up to like, I don't know, 500, 800, I can't remember what the fuck it was, like whatever it was. Yeah, according to what your income is. But I think you just like tell them. I don't think there's anything to stop you going like, oh, I'm not working. But I never got a chance to do it. But
I was about to say, I was like, shit, you did a full six session TM course.
Huh? No, I didn't do six sessions. This was just the first introductory course. So they taught you through it.
That was, I know, I was going to be like, whoa, you kept that quiet.
Yeah, well, I was up for it. I was just totally game for doing it. Like I booked it and everything. And then I got a
really?
New, yeah, and then I got a new job. And I couldn't
convert.
Do it. And then, because he's at school. So he's like, I can only do like the afternoon. He's like, the latest I could do is 4 p.m. And I'm I've not even left London. Like by that point, I'm not even thinking about leaving London, let alone getting back home and then going to Southend and all this stuff. Anyway, boring. But
you know who the other big TM people are?
Who?
Half of the Beach Boys.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
Yeah. Well, into it.
This guy, apparently, just before I forget, this guy studied with the main guy. He was
the Maharishi.
Yeah, he was in America. And studied under him. So he's like, I've learned from the head honcho, basically.
But you know, the Maharishi, he was brought into question. No. You know, he's the guy that the Beatles went to visit in Rishikesh.
Right.
And then they left the centre and John Lennon said loads of stuff about him being horrible. And he wrote that song, you know, Sexy Sadie by the Beatles.
No.
Oh, it's on the White Album.
Right. I'm not a big Beatles fan.
Yeah, but it's the White Album. Come on. Everything on there is like, it's like gospel.
Don't think I've listened to it.
What?
It's the Beatles. That's
amazing. yeah, anyway, he wrote this song. It goes, what have you done? You made a fool of everyone and blah, blah. And then they were like, I think it was called Maharishi. It was like, Maharishi, what have you done? And they were like, you better change that because he'll sue you. Jeez. So he just changed it to Sexy Sadie.
Really?
Sexy Sadie, what have you done? Yeah.
Fucking hell.
So that's quite interesting that you met this guy that then like went and trade with the Maharishi. Yeah, he's a bit of like a grey area kind of character.
Mm. Okay, that's interesting, yeah. I do kind of want to pick it up again, but
interesting.
Yeah. Sorry, anyway.
So anyway, yeah, well, if you want to pick it up again, you could get started by listening to a bit of Mystic Familiar. I mean, it doesn't come through. He's read this book, David Lynch book, and I think he's like thought about it a bit. And there's like stuff in here about, you know, our place in the world and, you know, when you die, don't worry, you're going to go back and become a mountain and, you know, we're all part of one glorious whole.
Mm. Just depends what that whole is. I did. I gave this a listen and I'd listened to his stuff because of what you'd said before as well. I thought it was all right. I don't think it has the same effect on me that it has you, but it's, I thought it was all right.
It's not all as poppy as that song as well. Some of it's a lot more like experimental, like dance music, I suppose. So that was quite interesting for me as well to listen to more like EDM type stuff.
Mm. Yeah.
not something I normally listen to. Anyway, that was Dan Deacon. Are you ready for number eight?
Number eight, yeah. Are with it?
OC's Protean Threat. OC's were really, really busy this year. Mm. They released loads of stuff. And John Dwyer has released loads of stuff, other side projects and things. So there's quite a lot of OC's stuff to like pick through. But I think this was the safer album that they released. It's come off the back of them doing some basically double albums, I think the last few.
Yeah.
Getting increasingly heavy, increasingly proggy. And this just felt like a lot more of a trim album, one disc. And it's just super satisfying, goes on immediately. There's this song that's kind of quite punky, post-hardcore thing. But there's some more, intriguing, slower, krautrocky stuff in here. Just a really good mix and takes forward the OC's sound in a way that's maybe a little more focused, a bit slicker, a bit more streamlined than the kind of last few records. I thought it was good, fun album with a few nice quirky twists.
Yeah, nice. It's out of the, I've only seen two OC's albums this year, so I don't know if there have been more.
But what's the other one?
What's that?
What's the other one that you've seen?
And it's got an orange cover.
Yeah, that's Metamorphosed.
Right. So Metamorphosed, I thought was more interesting, but I liked the first. I know it's kind of there's three, normal tracks or whatever, and then there's two super long tracks. I liked the normal tracks, if you want to call them that. And then I'm not so sure about the long, wanky ones. But this Protean Threat one, I thought was a little bit more boring than the other one. And just didn't.
Yeah, a lot of people have said they prefer Metamorphosed. The Metamorphosed is stuff that was recorded during the Face Stabber sessions.
Right.
And it was meant to come out much earlier in the year, but because of COVID, it ended up coming out really late.
Right.
I've got Metamorphosed in my top 20. I think I just listened to Protean Threat more. It's easier to digest.
Okay.
And I like that, after so many long albums, especially after Face Stabber, it's nice to just do one that you can throw on. Most of the songs are 3 minutes. It's a bit of a breath of fresh air, I think, for them.
Mm, nice. Yeah, well, what track would you recommend?
It really depends which way your bread is buttered. Mm. I think, what have I put on my playlist? So I put Red Study on my playlist, which it's really quite unusual, slightly slower, sparse, spacey, dreamy song. But maybe that isn't too indicative of the album as a whole. I might actually just go for the opening track, Scramble Suit 2, which is just this blast of energy straight off the bat. So album number 7 is Flower of Devotion by Dead.
Mm.
That's spelt D-E-H-D. Maybe it's not pronounced Dead, I don't know, but it is in my mind. again, this is a band that I only just came to this year. Basically saw people talking about this record and I heard it and I really liked it. Have you heard of these guys?
No, only because, so I was kind of researching what other people would put for their top albums of 2020, and this one came up a few times. I thought it was all right, actually. There was some, I thought it was a bit hit and miss with some of the tracks, though I couldn't name any off the top of my head. I thought it was interesting, anyway. It's been just a weird year, because it's, I don't know, there's part of me which is just not everything's sounding the same, but there's definitely like a certain, I don't know, like there's a certain vibe. We'll kind of go into it when we go into my ones next week a bit more, because it kind of affected the choices I was making in terms of my list. Because I was finding that like a lot of bands, I'm not necessarily saying this is what it is with Dead or whatever they're pronounced, but I found like there's a lot of reverb on everything. For instance, these days, it feels like everything's swamped in reverb. And I was hearing about how there's this kind of, what's it called, like chamber music or something that's kind of taking off and all this. And I'm just like, it's all these like, a lot of, drenched in reverb, but also like really high tone guitar work. It's all a bit jingle jangle. And then there's that mix of more like floaty kind of tracks, which I actually like, and a few of them have made it into my list. But some are just floaty for the sake of being floaty. Like there's no actual meat to it or anything like that.
Yeah. It's like shoegazy dream pop.
Yeah, but like the worst kind. And yeah, I don't know. So I'm not saying these guys dead or anything like that, but I was just like, it didn't 100% cut the mustard for me personally to make it on the list, but it was very, very close. It's definitely up there with like top 20, say, or something like that.
I thought you'd like these guys for that reason. I just was immediately like, it sounds like it was made in the 80s.
Yeah.
Emulating the guitar sound of the 60s.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that.
That kind of like reverb-y surf guitar. And then it made me think, well, it sounds like David Lynch, Twin Peaks type music with this like vocal that makes me think of Stevie Nicks.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I can see that.
So it's a really heady, like 80s-y, like you say, dreamy, kind of very reverb-y album. I just really liked that vibe. And there were a couple of songs that really stood out to me. The one that I like the most that I put on my playlist is Flood. So let's give that a go. I love how she sings this word flood. It's so weird.
It is.
It's like
something like that.
It's really strange, but unique.
It's I do like it. Maybe I need to give it more of a listen. To do it justice.
Yeah, I really liked, like I say, I think she sounds a bit Stevie Nicks-y. But yeah, it's quite a, I mean, it's not a voice or a sound that I've heard anywhere else, I don't think. So that kind of drew me in as well.
Mm. Dan, what makes it onto your number, what's this now, six?
Number six. Junior, un, deux, trois.
That's Junior with an E on the end, right?
Yes. So they're a French indie band. Don't really know much about them. Again, kind of come to this late in the year looking at other people's roundups. I think not Rough Trade, Sister Ray. You know Sister Ray record shop in Soho?
Oh, it rings a bell.
They used to be called Select Disc.
Right. Which one is it? Which one was it? Location-wise?
It used to be opposite Mr. CD down Berwick Street. Off of Oxford Street.
Yeah, no, no, where Berwick Street is. There's a few down there, though, isn't there?
Yeah. It's the big one.
It's the big
sells,
one. Okay.
It sells new music, more new music than secondhand.
Okay.
Anyway, I think they made it their number one.
Oh, wow.
The album of the year. So I was like, okay, let's give that a go.
That's mad.
I literally hadn't
heard of this until you sent it.
I've seen it pop up in a few other places, but not as high as that. I just loved it. As soon as I heard it, just the overall vibe. You know, it's very indebted to like 60s pop, you know, yay, yay, chanson, that kind of thing, which I like a little bit of. You know, I like Serge Gainsbourg. But it's just got a very like sexy quality to it.
Okay, that's interesting. Yeah, because I listened to that one track and it didn't do much for me.
didn't get your dick twitching.
No, excuse me, Dan. Jesus. Be gentlemanly. This is how you talk to all your friends at the rugby club that you frequent. Your bloody lad's humour.
Well, let's see how it inspires the listeners. Here's a bit of En Solitaire. I hope you didn't enjoy a solo workout on Solitaire.
Go on.
Just so you know, under trois, Sam.
Yeah.
That means 1, 2, 3 in English.
In English?
Yeah. So,
what?
Pretty straightforward album title. Just counting.
Just counting. Isn't it in French?
French, but it sounds so much more exotic. It sounds like there's some deep mystery to be unravelled in that album title.
Does it say 1, 2, 3, or is it written out un, deux, trois?
Un, deux, trois.
No, how pretentious.
Bloody French band giving an album a French title.
Bastards. Unbelievable. Okay, nice. What makes it onto your number? Where are we now? Five?
Number five.
Halfway.
Number five. Welcome, Sam, to Bobby's Motel. It's pottery.
Go on. I'd never heard of these guys again until you introduced me to them, and I quite enjoyed this.
Good. Yeah. What song did I put on there?
I can't remember.
It was.
Should we have a listen to it?
Let's have a listen to it. I'm going to tell you what it is. It's Texas Drums, part 1 and 2. I'm glad you like this because I thought, yeah, Sam's going to be into this. I think they sound, there's a little bit of like Fat White Family, but it's like way toned down. It's like Fat White Family without the hard drugs, maybe just with like a spliff, playing like Stop Making Sense era Talking Heads with some like really Devo-y stuff in there as well.
Yeah.
And that song particularly sounds a lot to me like Reward by the Icicle Works.
Hello.
Do you know that track? Yeah. It's like indie pop 80s anthem, really.
Yeah.
But yeah, so there's like a lot of 80s sounding stuff in here, I think. But it's like really funky, really cool grooves. And like across the whole album, there's a lot of that. It really does sound very Talking Heads influenced, maybe a little bit too derivative in that respect. But at the end of the day, that's what I like. So I'm like, give me more of it. Give me all your pottery.
It's like the Antiques Roadshow.
It's a great name for a band.
Yeah.
Pottery.
Yeah.
It just sounds so twee. Yeah, very and ridiculous. Welcome to Bobby's Motel. I don't know what the hell is going on. Like, the artwork's so weird. It reminds me of Frank Sidebottom.
No one else.
It's kind of creepy.
Actually, they did that film with Fassbender, didn't they?
Fassbender, yeah, Frank.
Frank, yeah.
Basically, they've come up with some character who's really weird, and they framed this album around like a trip to his motel, I suppose.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't know if there's any... I suppose, it's, yeah, it seems to be more of like an aesthetic, like presenting the album. I don't think there's like a concept album or a theme running through it. But yeah, it's just kind of like really, really good, like funky, upbeat, dancey, indie pop music. Mm. I think this is their first album. I think they did an EP before this. But yeah, like since hearing this, I'm definitely like going to make them one to watch. Keep an eye out for if they ever come over here and play live. If venues open up again, ever. Well, I think they sound like they'd be a laugh live.
Yeah, I'll check them out. I quite like this one.
So, we're now moving closer to the zenith of my list. Number four, we're back to Deerhoof and their future teenage cave artists. Yeah, this one it came out like around May, I think. I was starting to wane a little bit on Deerhoof. I think over the last 10 years, maybe.
You'd had Deerhoof.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
A hoof is a hoof. They, I think the sound that first attracted me was the chaotic, angular noise rock.
Yeah.
And their albums have been getting more and more smoothly produced and more poppy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a bad thing, but I think that sound just appeals to me personally slightly less. Although I will say their previous album, Mountain Moves, I do think was actually not all that good. It's the first one that I haven't actually bought. And on that album, they actually collaborated, I think, on almost every song with outside artists and had a very mainstream contemporary pop sound that I didn't like. And it seemed to tackle a lot of social issue kind of themes with a very much like a collaborative spirit of like, you know, we band together as a community of artists and we will overcome. And it even ended on a cover of Bob Marley's Small Axe.
Okay.
Which, you know, there's that TV series at the moment, isn't there? Steve McQueen has done a
thing
called Small Axe.
Yeah.
It's like it's an anthem about coming together in the face of social oppression, right?
Mm.
So that's how that album ended. And it's like they've gone away and they've thought about that, the same problems again, these social issues. And it's like, you know, again, it's really easy to read into like the whole COVID issue this year. But obviously this would have been recorded 2019. But even so, it's kind of like it's a dark take on the same issues.
Mm.
It's like they've gone, if we don't solve these problems, this is what it's going to be like. And produce something of a, like a concept album, I suppose. And what I love about it, like even the packaging, everything's like really reflective of this theme. Like future teenage cave artists. You're kind of saying like the teenagers of the future, you know, are going to be living in caves.
Yeah.
So everything's going to be wiped out. It's a little bit like Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, you have to think about it a bit.
Yeah. It's like they go, like the album art is these like cave drawings. And it's like a future civilization's looking back and going, oh, what were the teenagers like? Oh, these were the things that were going on in their lives. There's like a tardigrade.
Right.
You know, you know what a tardigrade is?
No.
It's, what do they call it? Like a water bear or space. Basically, it's like a tiny little insect, microscopic thing. But I think last year they accidentally sent some into space.
Right.
And they're apparently that one of the only organisms that can survive in space. So loads of people have been saying like, oh, you know, in like 100,000 years time, like they might have evolved and mutated and they'll probably come back to wipe out the earth.
Right.
So it's one of these like tongue-in-cheek kind of like jokes, but they've put like a giant tardigrade on there of like one of these like teenagers' cave drawings.
That's cool.
And there's like an iPhone, which appears to be like burning, like there's someone bowing to it. And there's all these images of like totalitarianism on there. That kind of thing, like the poor working underground. So it's got this like super dystopic feel to it.
Mm.
And the songs as well. There's some like really like dark moments. Like they've never been that kind of like visceral. There's like one song about the spirited deer children and they're being killed and all this kind of thing. Don't kill my puppies or something, she's singing. But what for me is like most exciting about this album is that they do return to a rawer, more noise rock oriented sound. And they've said they recorded a lot of this like on their phones.
Oh, really?
So like production wise, sound wise, it's those smooth edges that we've had the last few years have been like completely removed. And it just feels like a classic kind of like, yeah, noisy Deerhoof album, but it's got this kind of like more central cohesive message to it, which I liked as well.
Mm. Yeah, I enjoyed this more than I thought I would, actually. I mean, I listened to that one track you sent and then I listened to a couple more and I liked the kind of raw noisiness to it. It just sounded a bit more interesting, basically, and that's what I'm kind of enjoying these days. Like,
yeah.
You know, I think there's some stuff, for instance, I don't know if it's up there, but like the Proto Martyr album, because I know you liked it, right?
It's in my top 20.
In your top 20. And because if we saw them live, didn't we, if you remember?
Yeah.
And you hadn't heard them before that?
No, that was the first time.
Right, so I'd heard them a bit before that anyway. When I heard that album, that one, I was just like, I just can't stand this guy's voice anymore. Like, it's not bad, but I was just like,
oh, what, the new one?
Yeah, but I was just like, I'm just like done with it a little bit. And there was a lot of like, especially out of America, especially when I was like doing a bit of research onto like top 50 stuff and all the rock stuff that was on all these top 50 stuff, was just like, oh, it just sounds the same. It's like, I hate the guy's voice. And I think it's so basically what I'm saying is that when I hear something that's just a little bit different, I tend to gravitate a little bit towards it, but if it's good and different, if that makes sense, not just like complete tosh. Because the thing is, it's what's weird as well, I suppose, for me, I'm kind of going on a bit here, it's not, like, because I do enjoy listening to like noise, but I like noise because it is noise. I listen to it as noise music rather than I'm listening to something that someone has apparently like composed and built something else to. It's like, I would rather just sit and listen to fucking white noise for an hour and a half than listen to someone think they're making like a big wanky track when it just sounds like absolute average bargain bin kind of shitty indie or emo or punk or whatever stuff. And I'm not saying Protomata or anything is like that, but I think just these days, especially what I'm saying, I'm a bit more fastidious with my choices. That's the right word to use. And yes.
Well, Deer Huff, you know, it's a good time to get into them because this has been a great year for Deer Huff fans.
Mm-hmm.
And if anyone hasn't like listened to their music, you know, this is a really good demonstration of like musically what they're about as well.
Yeah.
You know, there's like amazing, like really wiggy, weird guitar lines that sometimes feel like they're at odds maybe with like the rhythm section.
Mm.
But then kind of like suddenly all pull back together in a way that makes sense and is like really exciting and exhilarating. Like the drumming is like, especially the drumming. Greg is one of like the best drummers out there, and he's got a very idiosyncratic style. Again, it feels like he's just right on the edge of like going completely off, like away from the song and ruining it. And he'll just suddenly pull it back, and you're like, "What? I did not expect that." He's like thrown in or missed like a few beats or something in a way that keeps you guessing. It's great, wild, challenging, surprising, fun music.
Mm. And what track should we listen to from it? Have we already done it?
Let's go with Damaged Eyes, Squinting into the Beautiful Overhot Sun.
Gets the bronze,
Mr. McCartney, Paul McCartney. This was my most anticipated album of the year, McCartney 3. Do you know anything, Sam, about McCartney and McCartney 2?
Mr. McCartney, only after so randomly it came up on my Spotify thing. McCartney 3 is out, and they had a little intro from Paul McCartney himself going, "Oh, you know, listen to my McCartney record, oh," and all this stuff. And then I remembered, I was thinking, I'll listen to that. And then I listened to McCartney 3, and then I went back and listened to McCartney 2, remembering what you'd said about it being him holed up, just making weird shit, whatever that he wanted to do.
Yeah.
And I was pleasantly surprised by both. I haven't listened to McCartney 1. But yeah, I thought it was... I didn't particularly enjoy it that much. I don't think...
Well, the new one.
Yeah, I don't think I'd listen to it again of choice, if that makes sense. But I totally appreciated that it was something new, different, and it just... And you would not expect that of someone of that age, to be frank, to be honest about it.
Yeah.
But also, you know, it's kind of a reminder that Paul McCartney is probably the best songwriter out of the Beatles. It's definitely the fact that he's made something like this. I was like, that's really impressive, because it's very like, at some points it's super, well, for the most part, I should say, actually, it's pretty stripped back. Even though it's like slick and highly produced, it feels very personal, which is kind of what it's about, I suppose.
Yeah.
Just like each track, I was just a bit like, all right, he's done that. I would not have thought of that from Paul McCartney in the kind of like, you know, Beatles mainstream thing. He's kind of done something a bit more experimental, not crazy experimental, just something a bit different. I enjoyed it.
I'll say he's still got those surprises up his sleeve.
Mm.
I'm like a massive fan of McCartney and McCartney 2. I'm a pretty big Paul McCartney fan generally, but those two albums, particularly along with Ram, probably my favourites in his whole Solo and Wings catalogue. So I did a couple of videos actually on my YouTube channel, Dreadful Dan's Discs, covering those first two. And I've also done one on McCartney 3 now. So I've completed the trilogy. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I was, you know, really looking forward to this coming out, but I was a little bit worried, like, you know, giving it the McCartney 3 title carries with it a suggestion, you know, that it's going to carry the same spirit as those songs, those albums, sorry, which were like experimental. That was the whole vibe.
Yeah.
Was like, he always seems to have this like pressure to produce commercial work. So those were times where he went, I'm just going to cut loose, just be on my own, completely solo, just record whatever the hell I feel like.
Yeah.
And this, it is more polished, a lot more polished than those two. And also both of those, I think they respond to kind of like music at the time. So in 1970, when he did the first one, I think there was a movement towards like stripping back all the like really ornate production of the late 60s, mm-hmm. more like rootsy folk. So he kind of like experiments with that a bit. 1980, it's synthesizer music.
Yeah.
So he experiments with that a bit. 2020, there's nothing, there's no like overriding sound in the pop world. And we've spoken about this in the past.
Yeah.
So there's nothing that he's really responding to. So he's just doing whatever the hell he feels like. Mm. And I feel like he has a crack at everything. There's not a lot of repetition on this album. Mm. They're very distinct songs. So it's not as well, it isn't quite as, you know, it's not got like the raw lo-fi of McCartney. It's not as like weird and experimental and out there as McCartney 2. But yeah, he is still, you know, he's very clearly having fun.
Yeah.
He's very clearly innovating and experimenting. But yeah, the production sound is slicker. It's safer. But there's just like really good songs here.
I think as well, it's like I would, being Joe Bloggs, whatever, expect something like this to be like, oh, he's just going to either do some like gammon rock, whatever. Or he's going to be doing something that's a bit more like, you know, of a parody of like, of whatever's popular at the moment.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's what Bowie was always accused of. It's like he was just ripping off whatever was kind of happening at the time.
Yeah.
And which I kind of understand.
Bandwagoneering.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I was like thinking, well, you know, is this going to be that? It's like he's listened to, I don't know, Grimes or something like that. And it's like he's done something and I'd be like, oh God, it's so cringe. But yeah, it didn't feel like that at all. It felt very earnest and authentic.
And some of it, like this opening track, Long-Tailed Winterbird, it doesn't sound like anything. It really does feel like authentically, like he's soaked in so much music.
Yeah.
And that's the thing about Paul McCartney. Like, he just always has loved making music.
Yeah.
He's just a creative guy, and that's how he gets his kicks. So yeah, you can really feel that love of just like in that, particularly in that song. It's it goes off in like strange directions you couldn't predict and does weird things. And I can just imagine him tinkering around and going, "Oh yeah, let's try that. Oh yeah, that's quite good."
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, let's give that one a listen.
Yeah, let's do it.
Long-tailed Winterbird. A little taster of McCartney 3, but like I said, all the songs on that are completely different. Probably the song that a lot of people, I think, is going to, you know, get a lot of hype is Seize the Day.
Okay.
Because it sounds like a single, frankly, and it sounds very Beatlesy.
Right.
I saw him saying in an interview, he was like, oh yeah, I was thinking that one, it sounds a bit too close to the Beatles, so I was wondering if I should even bother pursuing it. Which I quite like, because he obviously was thinking like, oh, I want to, you know, keep this experimental and different. But he ended up doing it, and it sounds like it could be from like any Paul McCartney album, right. But you know, he was right to include it because it's bloody good.
Nice.
And I imagine people getting very excited about it. But you know, this album's like number one.
It's not
like UK and US. I mean, they've promoted it so hard. Mm. They've gone hard and heavy on this.
Yeah, so they should. It's, you know, it's a decent crack of the whip. It's funny because it's obviously been a lot. It's been too late for a lot of to make a lot of lists. Last year.
That's why we're clever, because we're doing this in 2021, looking back at the whole year, not like all those other journalist dickheads who, for some reason, do it at the end of November.
Mm, that's true.
What the heck? Why? Why do they do that?
Got an extra 4 weeks. It's because it's when people Google it, I suppose.
Drives me mad.
I don't know. Oh,
drives me mad.
Friends just turned on. Yeah, I was impressed by it. So, yeah, well done, Paul.
Number two, just edging Paul out, only because I've listened to it so much more.
It's a funny album title.
Is the self-titled debut by Kariki. Kariki are...
Australian? Kariki.
Yeah. It's a terrible name. I did a video on this on my channel, and I was like, I looked in the run out, you know, the etching that you get in the vinyl run out, and it said like, thanks to Brendan for the name. I was like, yeah, thanks a lot, Brendan. Can you imagine someone's like, hey, I've got a great name for you. Oh, you started a new band. Oh, have you got a name yet? No, we were still tossing a few ideas around. Yeah. Oh, have you thought about Kariki? Yeah, go on. Yeah, whatever. We'll use that.
Yeah, whatever.
Whatever. The band is Ian Mackay.
Is it?
Of Teen Idols, Minor Threat, Fugazi.
Okay, right.
More recently of The Evens with his partner, Amy Farina.
Right.
So she is also a member of Kariki. But what makes it different to The Evens is that they have added Joe Lally, who was the bassist in Fugazi. So you've got half of Fugazi here. It's an evolution from The Evens. It sounds very, very similar to The Evens, who I loved. So I think there is a little bit, maybe you can hear some of the like latter era Fugazi sound in some of like the drama of this album. But these guys, like apparently they formed a band years ago, like, I think the last Evens album was 2012.
Right.
I think these guys got together in 2015 or something. So they've been together for 5 years, just secretly rehearsing and maybe playing a few gigs. So they actually sound like a really well gelled band. Like the interplay between them is quite, it's kind of like jazzy in places. But it's got the same kind of vibe. It's quite quiet, but like tense. Mm. So it's like got that quiet power, you know? And obviously it's Ian Mackay, so it's really quite political, but it doesn't get like overtly political. They prefer to do these songs where they like look at the effects on individuals. So there's these little songs about people and characters and situations that are like microcosms of the like bigger geopolitical issues of 2019, 2020, which is really nice. And yeah, all in all, it's just like, it's just an album packed with quality music and really nicely produced. Just sounds great.
Yeah, it does sound great. I didn't take to it, I think, as...
What?
As much as you did.
What have you listened to?
Well, it's just, I don't know, like, I kind of get it. And I can, now that you say it, I can hear that Fugazi kind of vibe behind it. I don't think, I just didn't, it didn't really do particularly that much for me, I'm afraid. And it's weird, it's like, I don't know, it's just like that kind of angular guitar sound and all this stuff. I don't know, I think I was just a little bit like, yeah. But let's not, you know,
let's not dwell on it.
Bring it down. What track do you think people should listen to?
I think they should sit down and have a cup of tea.
Have a cup of tea. Let's have a listen.
Kuriki.
That was Kuriki. Kuriki, mate. What's the gold?
I said there's nothing left to do except for talk about King Krul.
King Krul.
King Krul and the Man Alive album. So I've slowly been a slow burn for me coming around to King Krul.
Yeah.
Because when I first heard that, I wasn't sure.
Yeah.
Like back in, when was this? Like when the first album came out. Mm. And then a few years ago, we had The Ooze. Mm. And I heard that song, Dumb Surfer, and I was like blown away. I love that song, still do. It's one of my favourite songs of the last 10 years.
Wow.
And at that point, I got The Ooze, and I was like, there's nothing here as good as Dumb Surfer. It's maybe a bit overly long, a bit too ponderous, a bit too self-indulgent maybe. So this kind of really, I think it delivers on everything I kind of hoped The Ooze would. You know, it's shorter, more focused. And I really think this guy's got something, you know. Like, basically, he kind of like melds, you know, a bit of indie guitar rock.
Yeah.
Post-punk. But blues and jazz in a way that's very genuine. I don't feel like he's kind of like, oh, it'd be cool to like get a bit of that. That's a cool sound. Mm. I'll tack some of that onto my my music. I think he's grown up like really absorbing and understanding and like loving this music. And that sound, I think, is very much his. Like production-wise, obviously it's like steeped in tons of like reverb-y, fuzzy, dreamy, druggy sound. Which to me, like the whole thing sounds quite like seedy.
Yeah.
A bit grubby. Reviewers kind of like, oh, this is like a much happier, lighter King Krul. And maybe halfway through, there is a bit of a shift. But the first few songs on here are so dark. And there's one song, Stoned Again, that is so harrowing. And when he sings, like, again, he's got quite a distinct voice. Mm. He sings in this kind of like, well, I think it's South London. Almost,
but it's like a
South London.
Yeah.
But that is his voice. And when he lifts it up to like more of a roar, like it's genuinely scary. It's a scary sound and it sounds real. And it really conveys like pain, desperation. Some of these earlier songs and later ones as well that are a bit lighter, you can still hear that in his voice. And I just think like, this is like the real deal. It feels really authentic. It makes me think of other singers that were able to do that. You know, I think like John Lennon on the Plastic Ono Band album.
Yeah.
Lennon.
Yes, if Lennon.
John Lennon of the Beatles.
Oh, Beatles, I've heard of them. Okay.
But like he had a great rock and roll scream and on that album particularly. Mm. That was like his therapy album, wasn't it? Where he basically, he did the Tears for Fears bloke. He did the Primal Scream stuff.
Yeah.
And then he makes that album and he's like hollering and howling. You're like, okay, that sounds like genuine grief and anguish coming out. And I get that feeling from this guy, Archie Marshall. There's some lighter moments, very beautiful, but it's very sad, sorrowful, and really hit the spot with me. And yeah, it's probably the album I've listened to most all year.
It's really interesting that you chose King Cruel, because I would never have thought you'd be a fan, to be honest. So I listened to 6 Feet Beneath the Moon back when 2013 or whatever, and didn't like it. And I was like, I don't understand the hype. Like, it just feels like it's a classic wanky, like, muso. Like, oh, we've picked something that we think sounds a bit different when really it's just fucking boring. And it's like, oh, as you said, it's like, oh, he sings with like an English accent, you know, or whatever. And it's verging on not grime, but like it's got some kind of like dark electronic element to it.
Yeah.
Which just like musos like to wank off each other over. And I didn't really think that much of it, basically. The ooze, if that's how you say it. I didn't even know it existed until you said it. So I've not listened to any of that at all. And then, Man Alive. I had seen it on a couple of lists. I hadn't listened to it because of that thing of it being like, well, it's King Cruel, until you said that, you know, it was on your list. And it is better. I'm surprised it made your number one. Not because there's anything wrong with it. It's that I actually think it's pretty good when I had a quick listen. But I wouldn't have said in 1,000 years that you'd maybe pick this as your number one album of the last year. But it made me sit up and pay attention to it. So
I think why I made it number one is basically because I've listened to it so much.
Right.
So it's like, you know, this is quite a personal list as well. It's pretty subjective. I kind of went, well, if I listen to it the most, it should probably be up there. But I think of the others, it's the one that maybe hangs together the best as a complete album. It does feel, it's got a real flow to it. It feels very, cohesive. And it's the one that I think has the most unique, like, you know, it creates a mood around itself.
Yeah.
And when you play it, it will affect your mood.
Yeah.
So it's successful in that regard as like a piece of art.
Interesting. That's it, King Cruel. Man Alive.
Should we have a burst of... I think on my playlist I've put Alone.
Omen 3.
Yeah, which is quite a nice song. But I think I'm going to suggest we play a bit of Stoned Again to people, which is a horrible song.
Okay, Stoned Again, let's have a listen.
Desperate times, living through a nightmare of drug addiction.
Lovely.
What more could you hope for?
In 2021. This is it. Dreadful Dan's number one pick for 2020, Man Alive by King Cruel. Great. That's good, actually. Checking out some of this stuff. I hadn't heard of loads of this, so that'd be nice to kind of pick up on. How do you feel? How was the process of choosing? Do you feel satisfied?
I like the process of choosing because it brings order to chaos.
Yes.
Like I said, you know, it's really a futile thing trying to score and rank music. At the end of the day, there's a big load of albums and music I heard this year that I loved. And to try and sort of like arbitrarily say which was better than the other. I mean, who knows which of these albums I'll still be listening to in 10 years' time. But needs must, and we had a show to do, so ranking was required. But because I'm a bit nerdy like that, I did enjoy the process. But I look forward to hearing what process you've gone through to refine your list next week.
Yeah.
When we hear what you've got to say about 2020.
Yeah, I've got my 2020 record list, and it was a weird thing. it was a weird process to have to kind of choose these. And I don't know, like, even this year, because I remember, like, you saying, like, Fiona Apple had basically, and she's been, like, number one for, like, a few of these lists, which I think is crazy. And it's like, and as you said, it's like, it's really weird that people are getting on board with this. And I was listening to it going, it's like it's an experimental album, essentially, a little bit, especially for her. It feels like there's a lot of weird stuff going on here. And I do not understand how it's, like, hopped up to the people's number one album of the year and all these, like, mainstream, like, music press things. I'm like, what are they seeing here? Because it doesn't actually sound like there's better stuff of that ilk, basically, that's out there.
I think we do know why.
What? Because it's Fiona Apple.
I think we do.
It's the fact that...
But maybe we don't want to say.
What is it? What are you talking about? Are you saying that Fiona Apple has just gone around and flirted away to the top of these charts?
No. You know, basically all the, like, music critics and podcasters and things that had anything bad to say about this have been absolutely lambasted.
Why?
And accused of, like, male chauvinism. Because if you don't like it, then you haven't understood it, which means you probably don't understand.
Well, I don't understand anything.
You know, the experience being a woman 2020.
Right, okay. I need to pay attention to some. I didn't... It's not that I thought that... I was just thinking it was strange. It's just a strange pick, basically, because it's like, well... This is something I would expect from, I don't know, like we were saying, I don't know, Animal Collective or something, not as bad as that, you know what I mean? Not as advanced as something like Animal Collective, but, like...
It says a lot of things that people want to be seen to be supporting in 2020.
Right. Okay.
About the Me Too movement and all that kind of thing.
Right, which is...
I think it's been picked as a flag bearer.
Interesting.
I thought it was distinctly average.
Mm.
I liked it, but I was like, there was a lot of stuff wrong about it as well.
I mean, I enjoyed the new Taylor Swift album. And it's the only...
Didn't hear that one, actually.
It's the only album of Taylor Swift I've actually ever listened to. It's called, like, Forest or something. I can't remember what it's called. But she's trying... It's very, very slick, obviously. But Bon Iver is on it, for instance. And... It's trying to be like that. I think, is it called, I don't know, Forest or Foliage or something? And yeah, so that's what I mean. It's just been such a weird year. But, and it's been a lot of, like, there's not been, like, out and out fucking rock songs that many, I feel like. And yeah, it's disappointing. I'll tell you, here's a little spoiler for next week. Idols, Ultra Mono are not on the list. So...
Good.
You liked it.
I've given it 4 out of 10.
Fuck off. You were fucking batting for it when we were discussing it.
4 out of 10. No, so 5 is like an average album. So that's just, it's slightly not good.
Yeah, but you, that's what I'm saying. I thought it wasn't that good. I would give it a 4 out of 10, but you were saying it do you remember when we were talking about it?
I just... Trying to be positive. Positive Pete.
Right. Well, anyway, that's our albums of 2020 for Dan anyway. And next week, we're going to be talking about me. It's all about me. So enjoy, people. And we'll see you next time.
And if you want more music chat, vinyl photos, etc. throughout 2021, please come and join me on my Instagram and YouTube channel. Both Dreadful Dan's Discs. See you there. Bye.
Hey guys, thank you for listening to Oddcast Movies, Music and Gaming. If you want to get in touch with us or get a movie, album or game put on our list to discuss, then email us at oddcastoddballs@gmail.com or anewwinterpodcast@gmail.com. This is part of a New Winter podcast network, so head on over to anewwinter.net to check out our other shows. You can also follow us on Instagram at anewwinter, Twitter at anewwinter, and you can head on over to our Patreon page, patreon.com/anewwinter. Thanks for listening, and see you again soon.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Shopify helps you sell at every stage of your business. Like that, let's put it online and see what happens stage.
And the site is live.
That we opened a store and need a fast checkout stage.
Thanks, you're all set.
That count it up and ship it around the globe stage.
This one's going to Thailand.
And that, wait, did we just hit 1 million orders stage? Whatever your stage, businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com/listen.